Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, when you were in school, did you ever run up against one of those teachers who did things in an unconventional way? Well, our story today takes a look at how grades are handed out and what the implications are for all of us and how we think about each other in those things. It's an interesting story. And then I'm going to use a Civil War reference. I'm going way back.
Way back.
Way back. To talk about how we should think about our fitness journey. And of course, joining me for those things and much more is Upward Running Director and all-around good guy, Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. Happy almost 4th.
Yeah, we're just about there.
Huh? We're recording this the day before the 4th of July. And hey, I want to pick your brain about something. We didn't talk about this before we came on the podcast. I meant to. I want to ask your opinion on something. I'm just diving right in. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's good.
So, you know, I've been rucking and I've been walking. Been walking a lot. Been, you know, doing all the things. And I hadn't really been running a whole lot over the past year. Well, a few weeks ago when I was in Dallas, I went running with Travis and Claire. Ran 6 miles, and I mean, it was a little tough, but I genuinely felt I was just a little bit out of running shape. I mean, it felt good. Did you even know I ran with him?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you told me.
Did we talk about this already? So I thought, you know, you kind of pound your chest a little bit and think, I've still got it.
Yeah.
Sunday, I don't know why I had this. Well, I do know why I had this thought. Last weekend, Landon went and did the waterfront triathlon. I thought, I'm going to break my bike out. Dean, I broke my bike out. I pumped the tires up, and I rode 13 miles. I rode to Donville and back, and I thought I was going to die. And we were talking about this last night with Lane and Landon. I should know what the differences are, but I don't know. I guess rucking is keeping me in running shape.
Weight-bearing shape.
Somehow more so than biking shape, because my heart rate on the way back from Donville was 180, and I was doing 16 miles an hour.
Wow.
I mean,
I was going to say, you're probably trying to go too fast on the bike.
No, it was all I could do just to pedal the pedals coming back.
Wow.
It's like, I mean, I might as well have been a brand new endurance athlete, having never done anything.
Wow. That's weird.
Do you think it's just the energy systems, different energy systems? Because, I mean, you do use different energy systems for running and biking, but I thought,
honestly,
the cross-pollination would be close.
Honestly, I think it was a good day and a bad day. That
you think?
Yeah, I think so. But I think, too, that rucking and walking are weight-bearing exercises, and the bike is a non-weight-bearing exercise, and I think that probably has something to do with it. I think you're more ready for running. It would make sense that you're more ready for running than cycling.
Yeah,
I would think.
It just really took me by surprise.
I bet it did.
I got out and I thought, man, this is going to be nice. And the crazy thing is, it's been so long since I've biked that I don't have any. I mean, I have my bike. I was out there with a hat on backwards. No bike shorts, just running shorts. And it was humbling. Let me put it that way.
Well, I think that's good for us occasionally.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, I haven't been on my bike in a while. I don't know what it would feel like if I got on mine.
Of course, you know, we've always said that running helps you as a biker, but biking doesn't necessarily help you as a runner. But this was kind of opposite that, it felt
like. Yeah, that is. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe it was just a bad day. Maybe I'll try it again this weekend.
Yeah. Give it a whirl.
Kicked in the teeth again.
Yeah. So. Well, our post of the week this week comes from somebody. I was going to say an old, but I don't mean an old person. But somebody
She's
who's
a
been around.
Faithful,
yes.
Upward Running member.
That's right. Madonna Barker. She's feeling thankful. She says, some runs will be hard. Had to walk some tonight. This 5-miler puts me at 70.4 miles for June. The sky opened up right as I finished. Every run is a gift. All praise to God.
What a great attitude. Madonna, if you're listening, tell Mom I said hello. We got the chance to meet Madonna's mom a few years ago.
That's right.
Just a precious lady.
Yep, yep. As is Madonna herself.
Yeah.
But this is the way to look at bad days. When you have bad days, it's just say, you know what? I had a bad day. You know what I've always said? You have to have bad days. Otherwise, you don't have anything to compare the good days
to.
So be thankful for your bad days because it shows that you're human and alive.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good. Some people will they'll be cruising along feeling good and they'll have a bad day or two. And they'll be like, oh my gosh, everything's falling apart. Yeah. I'm done now. When I was coaching college athletes.
It's kind of how I felt on the bike last week.
Yeah, right? yeah. But don't dwell on those things. Just understand. Just power through them and move on to the next one. And hopefully things will be better next time.
Yeah.
And if you go a week and you have bad runs for a week, well, maybe you need to start investigating. But until then, don't worry about it. Move on. Every run is a gift, like Madonna said. I like that. Our run of the week, Dexter Padgett. Morning trail run was going to run 15.5 miles, but got lost. Good run for getting ready for Cherokee 130K. So he wound up running almost 17 miles instead of 15 and a half miles. Looks like it was a fairly hilly run as well on a trail here. But Dexter's been...
He's putting some miles in.
He has been hammering out some good training. He's just finished his first 100 miler. Now he's going to do this 130K. So I guess he's going to work on getting faster at the long distance races. But what I found funny and great about this post was he posted about this long run that he did on this trail. But then I think maybe the same day, he gets on the track with his son and does 4x400 with his son. Mm. Talk about a difference.
He's caught the bug for sure.
from one extreme to another right there. But his son's getting ready for cross country season, Alex. And, that's pretty cool. Have you ever got lost while you're out running?
Not really lost. I've been in some downtowns before where you're running and it's like, I don't remember which road I turned down and you can almost see where you're supposed to go, but it's kind of fun trying to figure out how to get back without looking at your phone or anything.
Yeah.
So
I was at the Florida Relays when I was in high school. And I think we ran 2 days and it was the second day. So it was I was done. Mm-hmm. And the coach said, go out and run 3 miles. And so, for a cool down, I went out to run my 3 miles and 10 miles later, I found my way back. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was on the University of Florida campus.
Yeah.
And, I don't know how I got lost. To this day, I still don't know how you'd think a big stadium would be easy to find.
Yeah.
But nope.
Well, sometimes in the downtowns, the problem is you can see the building you're going to, like where your hotel or whatever is, but the alleyways and stuff, they're not always opened up. So it's like you start down a dead end and something's blocking, so you got to go around and find your way back.
And it's really hard on, like Atlanta isn't all square streets.
Right.
You know, a lot of the, especially up in the Northeast, a lot of those streets, they're all, everything's square.
Yeah.
So if you get
city
lost,
blocks.
You'll find your way back pretty easy. But Atlanta is not that way.
It's a hodgepodge.
You go down the wrong way in Atlanta and you're liable to run in a whole different direction.
Hey, before we get off of ultra running, I wanted to ask you about something. You know, it was rumored a year or two ago, I don't remember when we talked about it, that Eliud Kipchoge might throw his hat in the ultra. Has anything come of that?
Well, he's still running marathons.
Okay.
So I think he's slated to run maybe, I can't remember. I think he's got a fall marathon he's running.
Okay.
So he's
not completely done with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
That's going to be exciting.
It will be. I'll be excited to see it. Well, good luck to Alex on his upcoming cross country season, his first cross country season. So I hope he does well. Our trivia question from last week was kind of different. I said, let's pick a race distance. We'll use 5K since that's the most popular distance in the world. What do you think is the best workout or maybe the most essential workout to get ready for a race and why? And I said I would base it judged on the logic applied to that answer. So I don't have the answers for this yet because this podcast hasn't published yet. But I just thought I'd share some of the workouts that I really like from a universal standpoint as far as particularly for 5K training, but are pretty good for a lot of things. And the first one I think about is 12 times 400. That is just such a great workout. Mm-hmm. It's 3 miles of work. 400 meters is a really good distance to really get into your lungs, but not too much. Mm-hmm. So I love to run 12 times 400. And for the 5K, I think it's really applicable for that. Now, you can make that 12 times 400 two different workouts. You can do it with 45 seconds rest in between each one and really work on your strength and your stamina and your endurance. Or you can do it with 2.5 minutes in between each one and really work on your speed. Mm-hmm. And those are two completely different workouts. And so that's those are. And what I would do is I would do the shorter rest at the beginning of the season, mm-hmm. shorter rest, slower reps, the beginning of the season, faster reps, more rest later in the season. Mm-hmm. So I also like 20 times 200. How many times have you and I been involved in that one?
I've ran back and forth across that football field. I don't know how many times.
Yep.
Timing those.
Yep. You know, I'm a simple guy. I like these workouts. They're just simple. There's, right. you know, a lot of people like to do, well, I'm going to do this ladder workout and I'm going to do these 800s and 400s and 600s and.
Don't complicate it.
Why complicate it if you don't? Now, there's a place for those. Please don't hear me say those are a waste of time. They're not. Certainly not. I like simple. So a lot of times, you know, we might do 20 times 200 or something, or 12 times 400. And then we might do some sprints afterwards, you know, something in addition to,
I think you and I kind of have always differed a little bit here. I have always thought, for me, the gold standard coaching the young kids of the past is tempo work. Just learning how to hurt for a long time, because it always seemed like, you know, especially the kids that we coached growing up, man, they could nail. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got to where they were like metronomes on these two. I mean, you'd say, you know, do 36 second 200s, and they would within a second either way, and they would be mad if they didn't hit it dead on.
Yeah,
but it seemed like we always saw some of our biggest breakthroughs once they mastered that tempo run.
Yeah.
Because that's not just legs. That's your brain. That's working that muscular endurance and learning how to sit in the hurt, which is where a lot of people, that's the workout when I am training for something. That's the one I struggle with.
Yeah.
It's just so hard to do because it lasts so long.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that's a good one. I think maybe, you know, we've always talked about this in the past. Physical, you're probably dead on right here. But the mental side, I think that tempo run.
Totally agree.
Trains that brain.
Totally agree. Another one I like is I like to do this workout. The teams that I've coached have always really liked this workout too. 12 times 300 mm-hmm. with 100 float. Mm-hmm. So you hit that start line and you go, you know, fast, mm-hmm. hard. For that 300. And then for the 100, you don't jog, mm-hmm. but you slow it down to maybe your easy run pace. Mm-hmm. So if your easy run pace, let's say your easy run pace is 8 minutes, then you slow that down to about 8 minutes, and then you hammer that 300. And it's interesting. I've seen some athletes get close to their 5K PRs doing this workout.
Yeah.
It digs into those lungs.
It can get dicey with some of the younger ones, because some of the younger ones who are, let's say, maybe not the fastest, they try to make up time in that float when they really should be slow. And you and I both have names in our head right now.
Yep.
But they would try to make up time so that they didn't fall so far behind that one or two runner. And so you got to be disciplined to really get that rest in there.
Execute the workout the way it's intended.
For sure.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we're back. Don't forget, submit your story. Hey, listen, next week, we're going to have a special treat because next week we're going to do a little bit different than a story.
Yeah.
We're going to share somebody's story, but we're going to do it interview style next week. So that'll be interesting. I think you'll really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It's about somebody who's done some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
So, but we need the stories to read here. So you need to send those in. Go to upwardrunning.com. Go to this tab where it says submit your story. We make it super easy.
Hey, and if you're not a member of Upper Running, what are you waiting for?
Yeah.
Did you see, I'm drawing a blank. Somebody joined the other day because they said that they got your reprimand or something that. And so they joined. So
yeah.
This is your reprimand.
Yeah.
We need you to join us. Yes. We need you to join Upper Running because the social is building on there. You know, we're kind of phasing out the Facebook platform, coming into the Upward Running app platform, which is new features being added all the time. We got some exciting new improvements that are just around the bend right now that are going to make it really even better than it already. I tell everybody the app is way better than it's ever been, and it's not near as good as it's going to be.
That's right.
And what's exciting. It's Brian and his team are just doing a killer job on this app. So we need you to join us. Go to upwardrunning.com and click join now. Download the app and log in and see what all's going on.
Absolutely.
If you don't like it, you can cancel.
That's right.
It's that easy.
Easy. Simple.
Yep.
Very simple. But you'll like it.
Yeah.
This comes from Canadian Running. The annual Chocolate Milk Mile Championships were held at Pinckney Middle School in Pinckney, Michigan on Friday, June the 27th. And for the second year in a row, Connor Vacon, I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right, I'm sorry, Connor, of Hope College in Holland, Michigan, broke his own world record set last year at 4:38, running 4:37. Chocolate Milk Mile event was established in 2019 by Quinn Cullen, who was a freshman at Brighton High School at the time. The rules are simple. Within a 20-meter zone, within 20 meters of start-finish line, you have to run the four laps of the mile. And in that 20-meter zone, you have to drink a 12-ounce cup of chocolate milk. Upon finishing each cup, you take that cup, you turn it upside down over the top of your head, and then you head on to your next lap. And you do that as fast as you can. Now, you will get disqualified if you have too much that doesn't make it into your mouth.
So wait a minute. Let me make sure I understand this. This Connor ran four laps on the track, and each lap he drank 12 ounces of chocolate milk, and he ran a 4:38.
Correct.
Whoa.
That's pretty good, huh?
That's 48 ounces of chocolate milk in that belly.
Yes. Yes.
I don't see how you do that.
Now, when you read
just the time of drinking, it's 5 seconds?
It probably takes a couple of seconds if you're good at it. I mean, if you're good at it. Depends on the person. But some people can drink.
Let's say it's 4 seconds. So that's 16 seconds of drinking.
That gets you down to 420 mile.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a college kid.
On 48 ounces.
On 48 ounces of chocolate
milk in your belly.
Yeah.
That's the part that we're leaving out.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is modeled after something that's called the beer mile.
Yeah.
Where they do this with beer. And the beer mile record, I believe, is faster than that.
Wow.
But it was a world-class runner that did it.
I'm not a beer drinker, but chocolate milk is heavy. I wouldn't think beer is, I don't know.
They have a different.
Of course, I guess beer is beer carbonated?
It is carbonated.
Okay.
Yes. It's carbonated.
So
and
that would make a difference.
Yeah. And it affects your.
And you're shaking it up too.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah.
They both sound pretty disgusting.
They both do. But it's a pretty cool thing.
You want to do the Krispy Kreme.
I do.
That's a 5K though, isn't it?
I would love to do this chocolate milk mile just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
I can't even run a 4:37 mile, let alone do it and drink chocolate milk, but. But it's pretty cool. Apparently, this kid loves chocolate milk.
Yeah.
So he drinks 3/4 of a gallon chocolate milk after nearly every hard run. Wow. 3/4 of a gallon.
I love chocolate milk.
Holy smokes. Yeah. That's a lot of chocolate milk. Anyway, the event almost got shut down for good in 2023 when Cullen sneaked a video about the past event into Brighton's announcements. There was a lot of slow motion puking in that video.
Of course.
And a lot of the faculty weren't happy. Even though it was only 2 weeks before the race, the school put the kibosh on it, so they had to scramble to find another track. Luckily, the school in Pinckney came through, and the event has been held there ever since. The goal of this event is nothing else other than to bring joy to the people that compete nor attend, the race's website says. Although it may get competitive, this is truly all about fun.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah, we've had donut runs, know, where you got to eat a donut in between each lap. Those are pretty fun. I've done that one.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. You got to make sure you get that whole donut chewed.
Of course, I think we gave them the option 1 year. You could do donuts or you could do a banana.
Banana.
And I think they realized that the banana is way harder than a donut. Because the donut basically just kind of melts depending on what donut.
Well, the hard thing about the donut is you're breathing hard.
Yeah, that's true.
And so when you, it depends on the donut.
Right. Yeah.
If it stays together, but if it's real flaky.
Yeah.
You just suck those pieces down.
It feels
down
a hot throat. Krispy Kreme.
Yeah. That would be easy.
It just melts right on
that's
down.
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is a pretty cool thing. And of course, the Steffi faculty had to get upset about it. We can't have kids having fun.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Why do people want to stifle people having fun? I just don't understand that. Are they just jealous of people having fun? Or what is that? I just don't understand it. I think we need to have more fun, not less. Well, here's a new one from Jerry Snyder. The title sounds political, but it is anything but. This one's called Changing My Vote. If you never change your mind, why have one? Edward DeBono, teacher and author. Basic drawing class, Ohio University, 1976. After a long and spirited discussion on the necessity of grades versus the freedom of expression with no judgment, our instructor decided we should take a vote. He gave us the opportunity to receive an A the first day of class before we even drew our first picture. The other option was business as usual. We would be given a letter grade on each project evaluated by him. Time to vote. We filled out our ballots, folded them neatly, and passed them forward. As the instructor read each vote, one of the students recorded and announced the score as the game unfolded. There was no clear winner in the beginning or midway through the action. It came down to the final vote. Pausing for dramatic effect before reading the tiebreaker, the instructor smiled. The winner by one vote was business as usual. We would all be graded A, B, C, D, and F. I guess you could argue that it was me who cast the winning vote. I wanted the traditional evaluation and grade for each drawing I finished. 40 years later, I wanted to change my vote. Not because I finished that drawing class with the grade of C+, which, by my own judgment, was very generous, but because I discovered a book. While working as an educational assistant at my local high school, the art teacher caught me copying this quote posted on the door to her classroom. Quote, "Mistakes can be like ice. If we resist them, we may keep on slipping into a posture of defeat. If we include mistakes in our definition of performance, we are likely to glide through them and appreciate the beauty of the longer run." I tracked down the authors of the quote and a copy of their book, The Art of Possibility. Benjamin Zater, who co-wrote the book with his wife, is the conductor of the Boston Philharmonic and teacher at the New England Conservatory. On the first day of each school year, he delightfully tells his students that everyone gets an A, but there is one catch. Mr. Zander tells his class that within the next 2 weeks, they are to deliver to him a letter explaining everything they did to earn that A. The letter is to be dated the following spring, the day the school year ends. For example, the student will write, "I wrote 3 research papers, read 12 books, and practiced the violin 2 hours a day. Not I hope to, or I will try. But I did." Mr. Zander's bottom line is this: if you treat someone like an A, then they become an A. Wow. Try this experiment on yourself. Start calling yourself an A student playing and learning in the game of life. Treat everyone you meet like an A too. I think you'll like the results.
Jerry never fails.
Yeah, this is a good. I don't know that I've ever heard of this before, but it's a neat concept. I think goes back to the power of the mind. I think.
Yeah.
Right. Is it if you believe you're a particular person, you tend to become that person that you believe you are.
Yeah.
And if the teacher treats you like you're an A student, then do you become that A student? You know, we've all heard the story of the good student and the bad student, and they got opposite grades from what they should have gotten on this test, and they changed the way they worked behavior. After that, their behavior. And it turned out that the grades just got mixed up.
And, wow.
But they changed their behavior just because they thought they were somebody different than they actually were. So, yeah, there's a lot to be said for that, I think, for sure. I feel like maybe this wouldn't work as well as maybe it once might have, though. Is this just an old person talking, that people nowadays would be less likely to follow that kind of a pattern? It just seems like people are more self-absorbed these days a lot of times. Do you think that, or do you think people are people and it works that way for everybody? Or that's a tough one, isn't it, to think about?
Yeah, that's one of those that makes you go,
Yeah. Well, I think it's, if you don't dream big enough, I think I see a lot. I see this a lot in athletes that don't dream big enough. Mm-hmm. I see the abilities that they have. And as a coach, I spent a lot of my time just trying to get them to buy into what I knew they could do. And
I think a lot of people nowadays, and this goes back to the phones. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole again. I just think a lot of people nowadays, they don't give much thought to anything. You know,
especially
I shouldn't
excellence.
Be so general here. I'm being pretty general here, and I probably shouldn't be, but they get their identity based on what others think their identity should be.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's why I think social media in some ways is so toxic, because you see these images of what you should be rather than sitting in silence. You know, we were talking about Michael Easter's book, The Comfort Crisis, the other day, and he said, as a society, we've lost the art of being bored. And he said, there's so much happens when we're bored. I mean, think about when you were little and when I was little, when you were bored, that's when your creative mind started. I mean, so many things come out of just sitting there in silence, and we don't have that anymore. So we turn to a screen where people are telling us what we should be, what we should think, rather than being bored, sitting there with your own thoughts, talking to God, whatever it is you may do, and getting your cues there.
Yeah. It's a good point.
Yeah.
Ephesians 4:32, be kind, tender, warm-hearted, and forgiving with one another. And I wanted to back up a couple of verses here and start at verse 30. It says, and don't grieve God's Holy Spirit. You were sealed by him for the day of redemption. All bitterness, anger, and wrath, shouting, and slander must be removed from you, along with all malice. And be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving one another, just as God also forgave you in Christ. That kind of makes my heart hurt when you read that. The idea of grieving God's Holy Spirit, when you have bitterness, anger, wrath, shouting, and slander, along with malice. We've all done that. Mm-hmm. So we're all guilty of that, and that hurts a little bit to recognize that, doesn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, I think, gosh, I'm really starting to sound old, Dean. I guess the more I go in my life, the more I understand that we agree. Even the people that we feel are just completely opposite us, we probably agree on 90% of things. But we get so hung up, and I'm not saying this about everybody else. I'm saying this about me. We get hung up on that 10%, and we will burn a friendship to the ground over that 10%. And I think that's getting, you know, social media is obviously, I mean, how many, you know, and what is bad is many times we see these arguments on Facebook, and we're drawn in as spectators.
Oh, yeah.
We're almost complicit in the whole thing with sitting there with our popcorn watching this thing burn down rather than not stepping into that conversation, but maybe picking up the phone and calling one of the sides or both of the sides and saying, hey, you know, put the keyboard up for a minute. Let's talk about that. Because it's always the stuff that falls in that 10%, which if we could just focus on the 90%, you know, it's kind of like I've been talking lately about our churches. You know, we agree on most everything, but we will split and divide and just burn the place down over carpet color. I mean, just so many innocent things like that. And so I think, you know, that's where Ephesians is really telling us, be kind.
Yeah.
Be warm heart. Let that be your default.
That's what I was just going to say. Yes. Because there are some things worth standing up for.
There is.
There are definitely those things.
But most of the things we're standing up for.
That's right. That's right.
Aren't those things.
And we're all guilty. Oh, I see this in politics. We see it all the time. We see the videos. So-and-so destroys so-and-so in some kind of argument situation. And that's where a lot of these arguments online, that's where they come from. They come from some political thing. And I just wanted to point this out. Because this really convicted me this past week. And so I wanted just to bring it up for everybody that listens to this. 1 Timothy 2:1-4 says this. First of all, then, I urge that petitions, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgivings be made for everyone, for kings and all those who are in authority, so that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. This is good. And it pleases God our Savior, who wants everyone to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. Mm. He's saying, pray. We should be praying for our the political leaders that we don't agree with. We should be praying for them.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of this argument and fussing and disagreeing over that 10% would go away.
Yeah.
If we were praying for those other folks that we don't agree with, right?
It's hard to hate someone you're praying for.
That is so true.
But scripture's clear that we are to pray for our enemies.
That's right. That's 100% right. So it doesn't mean we can't be passionate and speak out for what we believe in. I think we can do that, but I think we can do it in a way that's not condescending to others and that kind of thing. So, listen, I'm pointing fingers at me. I am.
Sure.
You know me. Whenever I'll read an article, a political article, and what's the first thing I do is I go down in the comments. I want to know what the comments are. And then I'm probably going to respond to somebody's comment.
Yeah. So, is it like as me and you are? That is one place we differ.
I know. And that's good for you. That's good for you. Matthew 7:12 says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Wow. Again, what if we all did that? Mm-hmm. Just that. How different would the world be? Again, it doesn't mean that you have to endorse what other people do. It doesn't mean you have to say, well, it's good that you're doing that thing that I believe the Bible says is a sin. But it does mean you need to love them and support them in other ways. And I don't know, it's so hard to do that for some reason for us. Mm-hmm. You think it's just our sin nature, or do you think it's something that we've learned as a society? You think that's, you know, like I was listening the other day, well, today actually, I was listening to something. They were talking about how there were bots out there that drove this anti-narrative that kind of just for the purpose of getting people stirred up. Do you think a lot of this stuff is just artificially stirred up and we're so used to being stirred up?
I think it comes out of our desire to be right. And I think the most powerful, and I can point to people in my past, people that I looked up to. The strongest way to say that I'm right is to say nothing at all. That is, I heard a podcast the other day. They were talking about nutrition, and they said, be wary of the foods that you pick up that say heart healthy, and all these, you know, low fat, all these things. It says you never pick up a bundle of bananas and they say potassium rich. They just say, I'm a banana. And I don't know why the way this guy was saying this, it hit me in a spiritual way that we hear the term preach the gospel and if necessary use words. Francis, it's always associated with Francis of Assisi. And that's true. That's we do have to use words sometimes, but so many of the times we don't.
Yeah.
We don't. I played in a golf tournament this morning. Mm-hmm. Some of my friends were having a big family reunion, and I went and played in a golf tournament. The other three guys on my team, I know two of them. One of them I didn't know. I'm in cussing like sailors.
Yeah.
Now, how would that have went over if I'd have said, you shouldn't be doing that?
Right.
But I didn't. I just didn't cuss. Well, guess what happened throughout that 18 holes? They cussed less.
Yep.
Now, that's not patting myself on the back.
No, but that's a great example.
It showed me they started picking up on, oh, Mitchell, don't do that. Now, Mitchell does a lot of other things that I could throw stones at myself for, but that's one thing I don't do. Mm-hmm. And I don't go point my fingers and say, you shouldn't do that, because they know. Now, there's some people that don't know, and those are the people we need to tell lovingly, but most people know the error of their ways. They don't need us pointing fingers at them. They need us just to live out who we are, and that's Christ in us. And that, a lot of the times, is enough.
Yep, yep. You know, what I hear people say all the time to Christians, mm-hmm. to justify things is, well, Jesus confronted the Pharisees. Mm-hmm. You know, it like it's okay to mm-hmm. confront people because Jesus did it. There's a difference between us and Jesus. I don't know if you noticed. But there's
they were attaching the name of God to everything.
Well, and Jesus knew for a fact what they were thinking.
Yeah,
we
don't know
what people are thinking.
Yeah, I mean, if these guys this morning would have said in the name of Jesus and then went on saying what they were saying, I would have said, hey, probably a little too far there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a false comparison.
Yeah. John 13, 34 and 35, a new command I give to you, love one another as I have loved you. You brought up, again, I think you brought up just a few minutes ago, this idea of friendly fire within the church, Christians putting down Christians.
Yeah, it's bad.
But I think, you know, that's one of the things I love about The Chosen, mm-hmm. the show, because it shows the disciples not getting along. Mm-hmm. And that's probably, well, we know.
It's okay.
Yes, that's okay.
It's okay.
Yes. But they loved one another,
right?
Regardless whether they got along or they didn't get along. And, you know, there's my brother and I, when we were growing up, you know, we fought like cats and dogs all the time. Mm-hmm. But if somebody outside of my family said something to my brother, then I was there.
Yeah.
And I was ready to fight if I had to. I mean, you know, that's just the way it, and that's the way we should be as
Christians.
There's
nothing wrong with spirited debate.
Absolutely.
And there's nothing wrong even with arguing. To some degree. I mean, you and I argue about things sometimes. That's good. That's healthy. But when you take it to a vengeance, when it starts to affect your spirit and your walk once that conversation's over, that's a you problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the other person. It's a me problem.
And what we do these days is, for example, if you saw me do something that you felt like I didn't need to do that was unbiblical and you wanted to point that out, you probably would point that out. Mm-hmm. But you're going to do that somewhere. You're not going to do that on this podcast,
right?
In front of everybody, mm-hmm. right? We're going to have a quiet moment where you're going to say, man, you know, I saw what you did there and probably, you know, you probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah, or even better, it comes to you and you're like, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, attacking somebody in the moment is never the right idea.
Yeah. 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 And man, I gotta work on that. I saw an article last week by a pastor that was, it was a pastor that he was doing some things. I mean, he was doing some vengeful things. Mm-hmm. And not only was he doing them, but he was being open, bold, being interviewed by newspapers about what he was doing. And I was like, that hurts the cause of Christ to me. That just makes all of us look bad. And I think that's so sad. I wrote him an email and I said, you know, I just, I just want you, this is what I think. I think that looks, it doesn't look Jesus-like to do that. And of course, I'm sure he doesn't agree with me. Mm-hmm. But we are supposed to admonish one another.
Sure.
We are supposed to try to hold each other accountable, to your point earlier. So,
yeah,
we should. Question, what can you do to make a slower runner feel like an A? I think we can do what we do. You know, running is running. It's good for you. And we should be excited anytime we see anybody doing it. Mm-hmm. I saw somebody yesterday, I think it was, one day recently, that was she was large. Mm-hmm. And you could tell she was out there and she was trying to do something for herself. Mm-hmm. She wasn't moving real fast, but she was moving. And I wanted to stop.
And doubt was written all over her, probably.
Yes. Yeah. I wanted to stop and say, man, I've done it sometimes.
People like that, yeah.
Yeah. I did this one. The look of doubt was so, I felt like it would come across as condescending if I did.
Yeah.
Because I was running at the time.
Yeah, you got to pick up on the cues. But the few times I've done it, man, it's like they glow.
They light up. Yeah. I remember, who was it? The wife of the coach at Cahulla Creek on the track team. She used to come out there before practice and she'd walk around the outside of the track.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to talk to her all the time, just tell her, man, keep it up. You're doing a great job. And like you said, she'd light up every time I'd say it.
Yeah.
And we should do that. I think that's a good way to get people to be excited about what they're doing and to build people up to that feeling like an A. I remember back when my son was running cross country in high school, and a friend of mine whose son ran cross country for the first time, he went to a cross country meet for the first time ever, this father. And after the meet was over, he came to me. He goes, Dean, I had no idea. These kids, they work so hard. Mm-hmm. I was inspiring to watch. Mm-hmm. And he was so impressed by them. And if we can just find it in our heart to be genuinely impressed. And that lady yesterday, she genuinely impressed me.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can find it in our heart to be genuinely impressed, then I think that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
That's what makes people feel like an A. One thing I don't like is I don't like false humility. I don't like somebody to say something, and you see it, and it's written on their face, and it's like, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. But... That's I try to, you know, another thing that I like to do, especially like local 5Ks, mm-hmm. I'll run the race. And then after I get through, I'll run the race. I'll do backwards. My cool down running the race backwards.
Yeah.
And I'll kind of cheer for everybody as they're coming in. I like to do that. It's a lot of fun to just root for other people.
And, yeah. I think one thing we've seen with, you know, when we were still putting on races and, you know, we never closed the finish line until the last finisher was done. In fact, our finish lines were louder for the last finisher. But that's almost like a drug. I mean, it's addictive to watch. I mean, to see these people come in and, you know, I remember the days when we used to send the triathlon kids out to run the last runner in, and just they're shattered in tears. And they're just so overwhelmed. They're so excited. They're so relieved. And there's so much, I just did that, written all over them.
Yeah.
It's
especially great when they're doing they're completing whatever that distance is for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you've never been part of that, if you've never hung around to the end of a race, I go back to, is it Jerry? In Gulf Shores that I ran in with. She was the last finisher.
Yeah.
Is it Jerry Siegler?
Siegler,
yeah. Man, that was just, I want to be a sweeper.
Yeah.
I want to do a race and be a sweeper because that is where you get inspired. Yeah. I mean, yes, I get inspired when I see you run whatever you run, but I'm more inspired when I see that. And that is the honest to goodness truth.
Yep.
It's if you've never been part of the last moments of a race, stick around and watch it.
Yep, for sure. How do you respond to someone who tries to make you feel less than an A?
You know, I think the older I get, my I don't give a darn gets better. Yeah. It doesn't bother me like it used to. I am who I am, and it doesn't.
And that's the best way.
It just doesn't bother me.
Well, that's because you have your value in what Christ thinks about you, right, and not what people think about you. And I mean, that's really, it's as simple as that.
I've kind of, although I would love a lot more, I think you and both of us, we've got a little of Paul in us where it's like, it's almost a badge of honor when you're being attacked for the things that you know are right. It can be hard, but it's also can be rewarding if you allow yourself to look at it like that.
Yeah.
But the problem is we let doubt creep in.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't.
No, we shouldn't. But most of the time, my problem is, it goes back to what you said earlier. We all want to be right.
Yeah.
And so when somebody says something to make you feel less than an A, usually that means they're probably saying something that's not true. Or they're just tearing you down for no good reason, usually. It's one or the other.
I mean, we can all take our cues from Jesus. I mean, he was being put on trial. What did he say? Nothing.
Yep. Yeah. That's a good point.
Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
Because he was right.
Because he was right.
And it drove people crazy.
Yep.
Because he wouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've popped off before. I remember some of the guys that I'm talking about, some of the older generation in my life who I really look up to. And I can remember as a teenager saying something to one of them. The guy never said a word. But the way he looked at me said everything I needed to hear.
You didn't say another word either.
I didn't say another word either. And it was like, there was so much power. I mean, he could have come back at me and argued. And that's honestly what I was wanting.
Yeah.
But the fact that the stoicism of just,
yeah,
kind of nod your head,
yeah,
turn around and walk off, that is way more powerful than any argument we can have.
Boy, I totally agree with that. Yep. Well, a lot of times, the bad part about this, people tearing other people down, which is kind of what he's saying here, is it has the effect of people not doing things they should do. Mm-hmm. I had an athlete that I was recruiting to come, you know who she is, mm-hmm, to come run at Dalton State. She's a very good athlete. She was going to make a big contribution to the team first year. She was going to be a good addition to our team. She didn't ultimately decided not to even go to college.
Yeah.
And I think there were two reasons for that. I think number one, she wasn't a great student. Mm-hmm. So she was worried about being a student in college and not cutting it, not mm-hmm cutting the grade or sure getting through. And then, of course, I think she had always been the best runner everywhere she'd ever been. She was always the best runner on her team. And she was going to come to our team and be maybe third, maybe fourth mm-hmm best on the team. And that was going to be hard for her. And she knew that. Mm-hmm. And I think that bothered her, too. And we've got to stop. I mean, this was a free education for this lady.
Yeah.
That she had right in front of her. And she just let it go because she was just afraid of what she thought she might not be able to do. And you and I know her. Mm-hmm. She could do whatever she wanted to do.
Sure.
But she just decided not to. And mm-hmm don't let when somebody is attacking you or trying to tear you down, don't let that change your direction at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just a bad thing to buy into. Don't buy into it. Know who you are in God. Mm-hmm. What do you say to yourself when you feel less than an A? Again, it's a good question, but I think it's a lot like the Israelites. You know, they needed to think back to remember what God had done for them. As they're wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, they gotta think back, oh, well, remember what he did at the Red Sea? You know, that's the best way for us to go back and look and say, okay, remember when God did this in my life? And I just think that's the best way. When you don't feel like you're measuring up or you're the person that you want to be, that's the way you get through it. Mm-hmm.
It can be terribly hard to stay on track as a runner or a walker. The world also makes it difficult to stay on track spiritually, too. For pennies a day, Upward Running can make both of these journeys more fun and much easier. Join Upward Running today and get access to training plans, videos, and the best group of active Christians you will find anywhere. Go to upwardrunning.com and sign up today.
Okay, I got this from Dumb Runner. If you've never been on the Dumb Runner website, it's amusing. Now, there is some foul language on there, but just know that if you want to go there, and if you want to avoid that, don't go there. But this guy just writes articles. His name is Mark Remy, and he writes these articles, and they're just satire, and I love satire. So he wrote this article. It's, "Any advice? Runner with compound fracture asks Facebook running group." A local runner who injured herself over the weekend is asking a Facebook group for tips on what to do about it. Dumb Runner has learned, despite clearly needing a doctor. June Foray, 36, fell during a training run Saturday morning. She wrote in a post on the group Runners Doing Running, and it really messed herself up. "Don't ask me how it happened, LOL," she wrote. "But I scraped myself up pretty bad. My left knee is swollen and painful, and now it hurts to even walk. Also, my left shin bone is super bad, like it's busted and actually poking through my skin. Any advice?" she wrote. The injury Foray is describing is known as a compound fracture, experts said, and requires immediate medical attention. "Oh my goodness," said Edward Everett Horton, MD, an emergency room physician. "This person has a compound fracture and she's asking a bunch of random fools on Facebook for advice." The fools in question leapt to offer tips for Foray, from stretches she could do to dietary supplements. One group member recommended she take it easy for a few days. Maybe try some low impact exercise like swimming or cycling. "Maybe new shoes," wrote another. None suggested consulting a doctor. Reached for comment, Foray told Dumb Runner that she is grateful for all the advice. "Runners Doing Running is such a great group," she said. "They're super supportive, and it's nice to be able to tap into their collective wisdom." Sounds like a runner, doesn't it?
No, it sounds like our society. I mean, really, you see this on every kind of forum. I'm on a lawn care forum, and yeah. You see these kind of questions. It's like they're... "Grass is obviously dead. What can I do?" "Till it up and start over." You know,
yeah, it's like, a little late. Oh, well, I know back, this is something you still see today. This kind of people get, they get pretty serious injuries and they're like, it's just a minor thing. But back in the 80s, mm-hmm. when I first started running in the late 70s, early 80s, this was how people treated everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it didn't matter. You could seriously be feeling like you need to be on crutches and you'd still be like, "Well, I'm on crutches because I need to rest enough to get in my run this afternoon." You know?
Yeah, but and we've kind of taken almost the other extreme now.
That is true.
I mean, growing up coaching when we did, especially like with the high schoolers, I mean, the kiss of death for a runner is to see them walking into the trainer's room. You know, it's like, we got to be careful right here.
Yeah.
But it's like... there are some things that you can run through.
Yep.
But in the days of litigation, everybody says take, 6 to 8 weeks off, yeah. whatever it is. And yeah. you're like, it's a sprained ankle.
Yeah.
We don't need 6 to 8 weeks off.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, it depends on, well, yeah.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
I had a good example. Just the other 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. I had some knee pain. It got really bad. I mean, I was limping and having a really hard time walking. And I was convinced after, you know, consulting Dr. Google, of course,
right.
I was pretty sure that I had a torn meniscus. Mm-hmm. I mean, it behaved like that. It felt like that. Everything said that's what it was. But I kept running. Mm-hmm. Now, would it have healed faster if I'd have taken a couple of days off? Maybe. It mm-hmm. might have. But I feel like there's a mental barrier that you cross
for sure
when you keep going, and I kept going, and you know what, today my knee is okay. Yeah. I'm fine. And I mean in my mind I was already thinking about, man, I'm gonna end my running streak in the doctor's office under a scalpel. I mean, that's that was in my mind, but it didn't happen. And yeah. that's what happens so many times when people get these little minor niggles and they think, I've got a major problem. I'm going to have to quit running for a while.
Niggles. Is that a technical term?
It is. That's a technical term.
Never yeah. heard that one. No, I agree. I think, I mean, and we got to be super careful of how we talk about this, because there are serious injuries that, I mean, this lady right here, obviously she needs to be in a doctor's office, yeah. but
yeah, I'm not so telling many things, people to run through pain.
Right.
Hear that.
There's so many things we build up in our heads. And yeah. so it really, you gotta take agency over, you just gotta have some common sense. Mm-hmm. I've probably ran through some stuff. I know I've ran through some stuff with you that I shouldn't have kept running through, but
I did the same thing. We both had stress fractures.
Yeah.
And we kept running, hoping it would go away. And it didn't go away. But
right.
we didn't know that at first. And it just as likely could have been something else.
Yeah. It's tricky.
It is.
But it really comes down to you need to take kind of inventory of your tendencies. Do you overreact to things? Do you underreact to things? So if you underreact to things, you may need to err on the side of more caution. If you overreact to everything, you probably need to use a little less caution.
Be a little bit more aggressive.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Because we're all wired different.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I was thinking about what social media would have been like back in the 80s. Like, I could picture me posting something like, do you think I'm running my short runs at the right pace? I'm running them about 6 to 6:15. Because back then, we didn't use the term easy runs back right. then. There was no such thing. It was just, you go out and run. It's, what's an easy run?
Yeah, and distances weren't even exact. I mean,
oh, no.
The only way you could tell distances is to go drive what you just ran.
That's right.
And
that's
what we did. Put a mark on the curb or yeah. something, or paint on the road.
We weren't that exact. You were.
Yeah. Yeah, that hasn't been that long ago.
No, it hasn't.
I mean, it really hasn't.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the younger folks on here would say
that's a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, it's a time for Dean's Thoughts, and that's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. What are we doing to ourselves? That is the question in this week's story. It's called Sabotage. It is hard to believe that the Civil War ever took place. No matter your perception of the war between the states, it was a brutal time in our history. Sherman's march to the sea was particularly brutal, even in the context of war. His objective was to cause as much damage as possible to the infrastructure of the South to demoralize the people of Georgia and the Carolinas. In other words, his goal was to sabotage the supply lines and the ability for the rebel army to fight back. The burning of anything useful in the city of Atlanta was just the start. One of the most iconic examples of this sabotage was something that came to be known as Sherman's neckties. They would heat the rails of the railroad and then twist them into unusable pieces of metal, sometimes wrapping them around trees. It rendered train travel and the supply lines of the South dead. Sabotage is defined as the deliberate act of destroying, damaging, or obstructing something, especially for political or military advantage. It often involves secret or stealthy actions intended to weaken an organization, system, or process. There are many forms of sabotage, but I want to talk about one, the sabotage of our health. We can begin with the obvious sabotage of companies that make food that they know is not good for us and will make us unhealthy. I'd call that a deliberate act of compromising the health of the very customers that pay for that food. But I don't want to dwell on them. I want to dig a little deeper and talk about the root of the sabotage, because it's not the companies that manufacture the food that are the most insidious of the sabotage train. It is us. After all, if there were no market for the unhealthy food, they would not make it. We can complain about the fact that 70% of our food is ultra-processed, but we're the reason it exists. And when half your food is of the unhealthy variety, you are practicing self-sabotage. You are deliberately damaging your body. The good news is that I believe most people do not want to burn through their health and leave metaphorical Sherman's neckties in their own wake. But here's the question. What are you doing about it? There there has been a groundswell of information about the state of our food supply recently. We can no longer claim that it's hard to find accurate information about what we put into our bodies. It's in the news. There are many podcasts dedicated to this single stream of information. The only way to be ignorant of the implications of our food and its repercussions is to metaphorically bury our head in the sand. So, what should we do? I will admit the information about how to turn around our collective health can be overwhelming. The hard part is parsing through the volumes of advice and distill it down to something we can use. I suggest we use the same method we would use for our training. We have always said that there are many ways to get to a faster 5K, but you must choose one of them and go with it. Picking and choosing workouts from different plans is not the best way to train. So when choosing what to listen to, do it like you would choose a training program. Start with either one particular subject, like natural food versus processed food, and study it until you understand before moving to another topic. Or find someone you trust and focus on their advice. For example, Mark Hyman is easy to understand and gives great advice. Focus on this podcast, on his podcast, books, and the things that he says, and once you understand and implement it, then you can move on to other authorities. We do the same thing sometimes in our spiritual lives. We sabotage our spiritual fitness by doing things like watching television programs that are less than wholesome. Or maybe we hang out with a crowd of people who are not good for our spiritual health. Whatever it is that keeps us in a sinful pattern of behavior certainly seems like sabotage to me. And I can hear many people saying, "But that stuff doesn't get to me." Doesn't it, though? I love classic rock music, but there are some songs I can't listen to anymore because I realize how anti-biblical they are. And I also listen to Christian rock to ensure I'm putting positive messages in my head. I have to be careful to avoid sabotaging my spiritual fitness through what I listen to. How about you? Are there things you are doing to sabotage your health? How about your spiritual fitness? Why not turn from those things and find the things that keep you on the right track? Our health won't get better if we don't purposefully pursue doing healthier things, and our relationship with Jesus won't flourish if we're sabotaging the connection with things that are good for us. Pick a path. Put a system in place to improve and then carry it out. Your body will thank you for the healthier choices, and God will thank you for drawing closer to Him.
It's a great story, Dean.
This struck me while I was watching a Civil War documentary.
I'm trying to figure out how you tied those things together. I'm actually going to, have I told you about what I'm going to in a few weeks?
I don't think so.
It's a leadership thing up at Gettysburg.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, up in Gettysburg. Yeah.
That's and I actually just read through, it's all right there. You see battlefield leadership on that paper? The whole story, or a lot of the story of the Civil War. I did not know, fascinating fact, I don't know if you know this. Somebody I said this to the other day knew it, and they acted like I should have known it, which didn't make me feel good. Anyway, Robert E. Lee, did you know that they tried to get him to be the general for the Union?
Yep.
Sorry. Why am I just now knowing
this? I just watched a Civil War documentary.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, he's from Virginia, and the Union came and said, "Hey, be the general for the—" I'm oversimplifying this. And he said, "Well, let me see what Virginia's going to do." Mm-hmm. And then once they succeeded, then he became a general for the Confederacy.
Yeah.
Thought that was fascinating that it was, he could have went either way.
Yeah. And he, I mean, he turned out to be one of the best generals alive.
Yeah. I'm excited about this workshop. They take you through, it's a leadership training thing, and they do it through the eyes of generals in the war. So we'll be doing it at Gettysburg.
Yeah, and, that's pretty cool.
Pretty neat.
That's pretty cool. Well, to the point of this story, sabotage is a very deliberate thing. And I don't think we look at our food choices as if it's sabotage, as if it's a deliberate thing. But it is a deliberate thing. We are making a choice. When we pick that thing off the store shelf, we made a choice to eat that thing. Mm-hmm. If we don't have that thing in our house, we don't eat it.
So, if you've been listening to this podcast, and I keep alluding that we're going to talk about it, and we will once I get a little further down the road, but I've been on this health journey, cholesterol, changing my diet, trying to educate myself. And I think this is what people need to understand. You need to educate yourself because a lot of the things we're learning right now hasn't caught up to the medical community.
That's true.
It's just most medical doctors, they don't take a single class on nutrition. That's a fact.
Yep.
Do with it what you want to, but that is a fact. They don't take nutrition training. Well, what we're learning is that nutrition is the bedrock of everything mm-hmm. that we're learning now. So prime example of what you just said, and I talked about this before the podcast, I haven't been radical about changing my eating. I've just started to understand if I do this, it's going to cause this.
Yeah.
And with our wearables and, I can see it in my sleep, we're able to take a lot of agency in our own health nowadays, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that already in this podcast. But I mentioned earlier, I played in a golf tournament this morning. Our best friends are having their triannual family reunion. So once every 3 years, it's a huge family from all over the country. And so we're helping them. Well, I told Holly, I said, I'm going to push pause on, I'm just going to cut loose on what I eat this weekend. Cause yeah. Dean is like a world-class chef.
Yep.
And I'm just going to kind of push pause for the next 3 days. Not going to worry about what I eat. I've been doing really good. I'm down 25 pounds. I haven't even tried to lose weight, but just changing the things I'm doing. The end goal is trying to get a handle on my cholesterol without medication. Anyway, so last night, I've been getting sleep. You and I have been comparing sleep scores. Yeah. I mean, I've been in the 90s pretty much consistently. And it's all because I've connected the dots between what I eat, time I go to bed, what time I eat, what I eat. Everything comes down to eating.
Yeah.
And so last night, I got ribs, French fries, fried okra, and dessert.
Oh.
My sleep score this morning, 37.
Your stomach's revolting. Everything's revolting.
Yeah.
Your whole body's going, where's our food?
But and I told you, I said, I'm almost glad I'm taking this 3-day reprieve because it's showing me, it's connecting those dots vividly.
Yeah.
That I'm not doing anything different. I'm still rucking. I'm still walking, still doing everything. The only thing that is changing these next 3 days is what I'm eating.
And it's radically affecting your sleep, which radically affects everything else you do.
Your health. If it's doing that to my sleep, think about what it's doing to everything in my body. And that's not to say that you shouldn't do it. I made the conscious decision because there's nothing wrong with ribs, fried okra, and French fries, and dessert. There's nothing wrong with that. The problem with our society is we're doing that day in and day out, and we're going, I don't know why I'm unhealthy.
Yeah.
And I made the conscious decision, and so for that reason, we never say don't eat things.
Right.
We're not that type of scorched earth.
Yep.
We say understand what happens when you eat certain things, what mm-hmm. happens in your body to your cholesterol, to your blood pressure. Is it making you insulin resistant? All of these things, to your point, if you listen to somebody like Mark Hyman or pick a name. I mean, he's the one that you and I are kind of following right now. I'm really cued in because he makes a lot of sense. But just educate yourself and I have taken it to a whole nother level now that I feel like I understand it. Now, do we completely understand it all? No. Do I completely understand Jesus and how this whole world works? No. But the more I learn, the more comfortable I get in my walk. The more I learn about my health and my nutrition, the more comfortable I am in making decisions. And that includes making decisions about, hey, I'm going to push pause for 3 days.
Yep.
That's okay.
It's okay. Yeah.
But to your point, there's so much out there now, and there's a lot of truth out there that is bubbling up. You got to distill it. You use the right word. You got to distill it. You got to read between the tea leaves on who's trying to sell something and,
Sure.
But they're all on to something. If you listen to all of them, they're all selling different things, but the core of what they're saying
it all is matches.
They're all saying food's the problem.
Yep.
Medication is not the fix in a lot of cases.
And we have great momentum right now on all of this. Yeah. And I feel like, I feel like Casey and Callie Means were the ones that kicked all this off.
Oh, they, yeah, for sure.
Like, I mean, people
even
were,
though, like, Mark Hyman has been around long before them.
A lot of people were around long before them.
But they kind of, because she did something so drastic. I mean, she was a very decorated physician at, where was she at? Cambridge? Stanford.
Stanford, yeah.
And he was a very decorated policy guy for the food industry. And they both walked away from enormous paying jobs and said, we're not doing this anymore, and teamed up. And it's a powerful combination because he was in the food. He was in big food. She was in big pharma, making bukus of money. And they both stepped away and said, here's what's going on, people.
Yep.
You need to listen.
Yeah. And Casey wrote a book called Good Energy. Mm-hmm. It's a good book. Mm-hmm. It is overwhelming to read the book. And so I think that's the problem that a lot of people have is it the information just becomes overwhelming. But I go back to what our friend Spider says. Mm-hmm. Change one thing.
Right.
Just find one thing that you know. You drink Coke today. Okay. Well, we know that's low-hanging fruit.
Sure.
Cut that out. Stop that. Change. Start drinking
you
water tomorrow.
You can't justify it.
No, you
can't. Take away the things you can't justify.
That's
first.
Right. Yeah. And do that one little piece at a time.
Yeah.
Maybe this month. Maybe it's one thing a month. That's it. And improve just a little at a time.
And learn a little bit.
And learn.
Don't try to open up the encyclopedia of nutrition. Pick one thing. That's what I did.
Yeah.
I was picking one thing at a time. And I would take a deep dive into it.
Yeah.
And really learn it and understand it. And I mean, if you want a good one, research insulin resistance.
Yeah.
It'll blow your mind.
Oh, it will.
It'll blow your mind that how many of us are there, and that is the root of a lot of the obesity in our country is our body's just overwhelmed with sugar and processed foods, and our body produces insulin to help level all that out, and our bodies just become immune to it.
Yep.
It's like antibiotics. If you take them too much, you don't respond to them.
That's right.
And that's what's going on in our bodies. So pick one thing and dive into it.
That's right.
And the great thing is there's not a ton of the things. There's 8 or 10 things that if you can get your head around them.
Yeah. It's not,
you
a lot.
Don't need to understand what is going on at a micro level in your, you know, whatever in your body. You just need to know the big things.
Yeah.
Because if you just take care of those things, the rest take care. You know, you hear the phrase, we'll step over a dollar to pick up a quarter. That's what we do so many times.
Yeah.
We get hung up on this little bitty thing, you know, better form, putting your elbow out a little bit further is going to make you a faster runner. No, getting out there and doing 3 workouts a week is going to make you faster. Yeah. Start with that.
Yeah.
But we'll ignore that.
Yep.
And we'll talk about this elbow thing.
Yep.
That's going to make me a faster runner.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. You're right. Yeah. If you don't, I thought about this. If you don't take action to go in the right direction, you're going in the wrong direction. Because the natural flow is in the wrong direction.
Sure.
It's sort of like our spiritual life, right? If we don't take affirmative action to go in God's direction, society is going to take us away from God. That's how our health is too. You got to go against whatever the flow is. You're probably going to have to swim against the stream to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. So just know that too.
And be comforted in knowing, because I experienced this morning. We have this problem, and this is, I think, a human problem. I woke up this morning and I was like, oh, you blew it. 6 months of work and you've just thrown it all away. No. I made a choice and I'm going to do it again tonight.
Yep.
I'm going to eat whatever that man cooks because it's good. But we need to get away. We see this with people with running. They miss a workout and they quit running.
That's true.
And the endurance that we learn from this sport, we need. Or the endurance you learn through your faith. Some people are master of this in their walk with Christ, but they crumble the first time one little thing happens in their workout. you got both those personalities that can learn from each other.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Give yourself grace.
Amen.
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share helpful tips each day along with encouraging quotes. Choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be an Upward Running member for access to this exciting challenge. So if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, it is just a click away to get started today.
Every week I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. Runners are just tough people in general. I'd say tougher than average because running just makes you that way. Walkers are tougher too because, you know, they have some of the same issues as runners. I'm sure there are days that if you're a walker, you don't want to get out there and do it, but you do it anyway, and that makes you tougher. And I think that's a good thing. I like the idea that we are tougher than the average people because we get out there and we do something that is good for us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Faith Kipyegon, they did the breaking four attempt. Did you see it at all?
I saw the I didn't watch it.
Okay.
I saw the articles and stuff on it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she still broke a world record, didn't she? Did it count?
It doesn't count.
Okay.
But
time-wise, she broke a world record.
Yeah, though. One of the things that Nike did that I felt was dishonest on this thing, talking about breaking the world record, is that when she got through, her time was 406.91. And then a few minutes later, they revised her time down to 406.42. Well, you know, sometimes they'll revise it a hundredth or two, never a half a second. Well, it turns out what they had decided was they were going to count when she crossed the starting line instead of at the gun, which, you know, that's not how they time things, which I think is fine. If you tell everybody ahead of time, this is one of the ways that
she's going to get a running start.
She's going to get a running start. Yes. Then I think that's fair if you say it up front, but they didn't say it up front and you had to find out about it after everybody started questioning. Why did they revise that down a half second? So anyway, other than that, though, I thought Nike did a good job with it. And you know how much it pains me to say Nike did a good job on anything, but they did. They met in Paris where she had set the 1500 meter world record a year ago. I think she had nine people as pacers. She had Grant Fisher running right beside her. She said she liked running next to Grant Fisher. That's why she wanted him next to her. You know, he's so smooth. That's probably why. Had a couple of women that were with her, Gemma Reekie and Georgia Hunter Bell, both British athletes that were running with her. The world record was 407. She ran 406. So that was pretty cool. Faith has just a great attitude. She came out there and she ran like 61 for the first lap and she was like 201 high for the second lap. So she was on pace through three laps. I think she was like 303. She was on pace to possibly, if she had a really good last lap, do it. But instead she was, by the time about halfway through the third lap, you could see the fatigue was setting in and she was starting slow. But again, 406 still. If you'd have told me a woman was going to run 406 10 years ago, I would have said, yeah, or probably not. Yeah. So that's great. Still a long way from four flat.
Yeah.
Still got a long way to go. But good for her for trying. You know, it would be easy to say, you know what, that's a little too far of a stretch. And to put yourself out there knowing everybody is watching you.
Mm-hmm.
Run, and you're the only person that counts in this thing is a pretty bold thing to do. So, and knowing that there's a 99% chance you're going to fail in doing what it is you're trying to do, is a pretty hard thing to do. So good for her.
A lot of character built out of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask you this, kind of along that same lines. Do you think when Kipchoge did the breaking two, I know it would, as far as percentage-wise, it wasn't as much of an advance as she would have had to have, but do you feel like that's kind of in the same league as what Kipchoge did when he did breaking two?
No. No, I think this was way harder.
But did you think Kipchoge was going to do it?
I thought he had a chance at it. Well, okay. Well, I say that. I don't know if I thought it the first time. You knew I thought he had a really good chance the second time he tried it. But the first time he tried it, he got closer than I thought he would. I think. I don't remember.
That's exactly just, I admire that with people that will try something like they've done. Yeah. I mean, it's just, because it, you're right. It's, you're putting yourself out there and there's a good chance this is going to go down in flames. And then you're going to get that, well, I told you they couldn't do it. And, you know, that's where I start getting upset with people is when they quarterback, Monday morning quarterback.
I do too. But, you know, I really haven't heard a lot of that. So I'm really kind of proud of the running community for not doing that, because that would have been a really low hanging thing. That just would have been bad. There's no reason to do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would like to point out one thing the male Pacers were toying with her. They're running this. And I say this because I know this is a political issue, but men don't belong in women's sports, and this was the best example of it I've ever seen. I'm telling you, I've never seen a better example, because they were turned around, almost running backwards down in the last lap, trying to encourage her to run hard and keep going. And so they're just, it's easy for them to run 4:06. And she is, you know, she's digging as hard as she can. She's got pained look on her face.
Yeah, but I
And she's running faster than a woman has ever run, ever.
Yeah, but if I were them, I mean, you're the same.
Oh, I would do the same thing.
We're like in trying to encourage.
Absolutely. Yeah. What they were doing was great.
Yeah.
But my point is, if there's anybody listening.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I thought you were criticizing them for doing
no,
that.
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
They were doing a great, they did a fantastic job.
You're saying the contrast there is just.
It was glaring.
Yeah.
Absolutely glaring.
Yeah, I mean, so I think everybody probably understands where you and I stand on the subject.
Yeah. So I just wanted to point it out. Our trivia question for this week. True or false? Good running form means taking full advantage of the cushion in the heel of your shoe. True or false? You like the way I worded that?
That sounds like a trick question.
Good running form means taking full advantage of the cushion in the heel of your shoe. Hmm. All right. If you know the answer to that, send it to dean@upward.org. And if you're the first member to send that in, you'll win $20 off in the store. So get cracking. True or false? You got a 50-50 chance, even if you're not sure what the answer is. Our motivational thought of the week comes from Arthur Ashe. Arthur Ashe said, start where you are, use what you have, do what you can. Hmm. Isn't that great?
Who is Arthur Ashe? I recognize
tennis
that name.
Player.
I recognize
tennis
that
player.
Name.
I think he might have been. Was he the first black tennis player, maybe?
I don't know.
Maybe he was the first black guy to win a major. But anyway, good guy, Arthur
Ashe.
I like his quotes. I like simple. I like pithy. And this does both of those things.
Mm-hmm.
If you're one of those people who worry about what you don't have, stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that will get you nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It will not help. And all you can do is do the best you can with what you got.
Do a little better today than you did yesterday.
That's right. Better than you
That's
did.
That's progress.
Don't worry about your friend or your rival or somebody else. Worry about you doing better.
Get off Facebook.
Yep. And go for it.
Absolutely, Dean.
All right. Don't forget, join Run Club. If you're not part of Run Club, join. Get the app. Get on there. Start interacting.
And if you're a runner and you're a follower of Christ, which I would assume everybody listening to this podcast probably fits in that category. They're either a walker or they're a runner. Or maybe they're a rucker. We're getting some ruckers in this community now for some reason. And you love Christ, then guess what that makes you? Makes you the perfect candidate to coach a 5K challenge in your community. And we want you to do that. It's life-changing.
Absolutely.
We talk about hanging out at the back of the pack at the end of a race. We talked about that earlier. You get to hang out with them for 12 weeks. These people will change your life.
They absolutely will, 100%.
For sure.
Absolutely. Until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.